So what you're about to hear is a nice segue for those of you that were in the previous presentation from the Innovation Exchange that you've just been hearing about. Rather than talking about how the AHSN network finds innovations and then supports those through some of the earlier stages, perhaps, of the innovation pathway, Sarah and I are going to be talking to you all about our approach down in the Southwest to spreading innovation and try and get into some of the nitty-gritty of how we're trying to do it. So my name's Stuart Monk. I'm Associate Director of Delivery at the Southwest AHSN. Job title doesn't really mean much. Broadly, my role involves trying to work out how to take our national asks for spread, whether that's service delivery innovation or product-based innovation, and get those embedded in the way that health and care is delivered across Somerset, Devon and Cornwall and all of the NHS organisations therein. Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Robins, and my job title is I'm Evaluation Lead, and I'm also a Spread Fellow at the Southwest Academic Health Science Network. So I do lots of evaluation work, but on top of that, I do a lot of work around the sort of science of spread, and we've been doing a lot of work, which we're going to talk to you about today, about how to make spread possible and how to really deliver on spreading projects. So I've been doing a lot of work on that recently.
So just to provide a bit more additional context, really, for why Sarah and I are talking to you now, about, I think it was almost 2 years ago when the AHSN network was going through its relicensing process with NHS England, NHS England set AHSNs the challenge of coming together around a handful of the innovations that we'd all been working on in our sort of different localities, agreeing on, you know, seven things that we were all going to then go back to our regions, work on and get embedded in our systems. For us down in the Southwest, it's probably fair to say we hadn't really majored on spread particularly in our first 5 years. So we had to do a bit of quick soul searching, some rapid learning and try and work out, I suppose, who from the wider world, whether it's academic research or more practically, who should we be learning from to get better at spread for our region and for our patients, ultimately? So that's why we're here talking to you now. It's just to try and share or talk about two certainly key influences that we've been learning from over the last 18 months to help us get better at the ultimately the project delivery or the spread work that we do down in the Southwest. So as the title of the talk suggests, there are two, sets of people, one person that we are learning from to help us get better at spread. Many of you will probably be familiar with the work of Professor Tricia Greenall, who an Oxford-based academic and former GP, very active around research in this area, around human behavioural change, and ultimately what works when you're trying to take a service improvement or an innovation from one health and care setting into another. So that's one of our key influences. And the second are a US-based organisation called the Billions Institute that I would imagine less of you have heard of. We're quite fortunate. Our chief executive, Jonathan Gray, had spent some time working with the Billions Institute in one of his former roles. And when he joined us 2 years ago, was able to bring that partnership to us. And we've been learning a lot from the way that they do large-scale health and care change over in the US health and care setting. So that's our, I suppose, more practical influence over the work that we do, and how we do it. So I'm going to give you a quick description of some of the Tricia Greenall work and how we're using that to try and plan better for large-scale spread in the Southwest. Sarah's going to be talking to you as our spread fellow about how we work with the Billions Institute. I'll then be trying to tell you how we apply both of those learnings to the work that we are currently doing. And then finally, we've got a video to show you which shows our what we call Spread Academy down in the Southwest, which we deliver in conjunction with the Billions Institute. So, Professor Tricia Greenall, fairly self-explanatory side. These are some of the academic publications that Tricia's been working on over the last 15 to 20 years. There are two in particular that we've been drawing influence from to try and help steer the work that we do. The first one's 15 years old, goes back to 2004. The title was How to Spread Good Ideas, so fairly self-explanatory. And within this, Tricia defines seven areas around a service improvement or innovation that you need to bear in mind if you want to make your spread project successful. The first of which, obviously, the innovation itself. For us down in the Southwest, we do try and take as much time as possible really getting to grips and immersing ourselves in the thing that we are trying to spread, whether it's a product or a widget, whether it's a digital piece of technology, whether it's a service improvement. You know, we try and go out and see it. The closer you can get to it, the better, as far as we're concerned, so that you can, you know, ultimately have better conversations with people about it. The adoption process. So certainly the programmes that the AHSN network have been working on over the last couple of years, I can think of at least two, and I'll refer to those later, have quite a clearly defined process or method that comes with them to try and get those embedded in the system. But then some others that we're working on don't necessarily. But either way, when you're planning, you need to really think about how you are going to do something from a project delivery standpoint. And then the next couple of these are more about the context, really, that you're going to be working in. So if you are trying to spread innovation A into organisation B, what's happening in that organisation that's going to impact on your ability to change people's behaviour and spread something? And then what else is happening around that organisation in their region and the politics surrounding them that's going to impact on your ability? And again, these are things that we try to tease out and we'll show you how a bit later on. The nature of your campaign around this alludes to the comms side of things, really. Rather than just including a quick paragraph in a newsletter or emailing lots of people, how do you make the dissemination, the spread, more of an active rather than a passive process? How many meetings do you need to have? Do you need to pull people together in workshops? Do you need to do some network mapping to go out and talk to groups of people that already get together? So that's something that we try to consider at the start as well. And then ultimately, how active does the implementation process itself need to be? How much clinical time are you going to need? How much of our own time within the AHSN is going to have to be imparted upon the system? I think one of the quirks that we've noticed of this work, and I'm sure other AHSNs are noticing it too, is that more often than not, these are not end-to-end projects that we deliver ourselves. We're delivering spread. Ultimately, we're delivering behavioural change, and that's quite a subtlety. It means that we're not in control, basically, of success and what we can try and influence other people to do. I don't know where my seventh one disappeared to. We'll stop at six. Something else that Tricia Greenall works on is using questions to try and work out the answers to some of the points that I raised in the previous slide, especially around context setting. And colleagues at Wessex AHSN have produced an excellent spread and implementation toolkit that all of the AHSNs are currently using to try and roll out the innovation and technology payment products that we're all working with NHS England on across our trusts. So again, coming back, you know, within this, there are other AHSNs who are using similar influences to ourselves. So we're not the only experts in the room. But asking the right questions is really key when you're planning for spread around the innovation, to try and make sure that you're happy with your context, the innovation, the organisations that you're going to be trying to working with, the early adopters. What do people need to know? And that will be dependent on the type of stakeholder within the system. So a commissioner and a finance person might want to know something different about the innovation compared to a frontline clinician who may be more interested in the patient benefits. And we need to make sure in the planning phase that we've got all of this information to hand and that we're really actively considering who we are talking to in the system and what messages we think they're going to want to hear about the innovation that we're going to be spreading. So that's the 2004 Greenall paper. The second one has only just been published. And it's a brilliant read. If you haven't read it, then please drop me a line afterwards and I'll share it with you. It's a super paper. It's only 7 or 8 pages long. So within this, Greenall defines 3 different approaches that you could take when spreading innovation. And we're finding this quite helpful to just try and instantly, for things that land with us now, categorise how complex we think something's going to be to spread. And I'll show some examples of how we're retrofitting some of the national programmes that all of the AHSNs are working on to these 3 themes, because they weren't available when we first started doing them, because this has only just been published. So the first one is an implementation approach, as Tricia describes it. For those of you with a quality improvement background, and I'm looking around the room, I know a few of you have, that's really taking a measured approach to behavioural change. QI often gets described as being the way that you introduce small tests of change as well, although not always. I think you can take some of the QI thinking and tools and use those to embed larger changes as well. But it's structured. Generally, it's quite top-down as well. You know, this is a really good idea, so why aren't we doing it? Getting a local team to set a good aim, come up with some clear drivers for their work, you know, some good change ideas, and then ultimately getting them to measure the thing that they're embedding so that they're seeing how that's impacting on their local system. The second approach that Tricia describes is the complexity approach. So this is the complete opposite, really, where you're taking something that's perhaps larger scale, involves more parts of the system, involves bringing more stakeholders together from different departments, different organisations, even, you know, different parts of the public sector, as we're finding in one of the innovations that we're working on at the moment. So that's a very noisy system, lots of different people that you're having to bring together to try and convince, all of whom will have their own desires, agendas, be working on their own pieces of change work. Almost a complete opposite, really. And again, for us, when we're thinking about new pieces of work now, we're thinking about how we factor this recognition in right from the start of something. And then the final, which is quite similar to the complexity one, really, but focuses more, from my reading of Tricia Greenhall's paper, on the nature of human relationships. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a large-scale change across a whole system, but where the innovation that you're spreading involves some complexities around human relationships within a particular organisation or structure. So again, that's something that we're finding quite useful to try and help define. At that point, I'm going to pause, actually, as we've got quite a small audience, and ask if anyone's got any questions. Stunned silence, good. Right, Sarah. Oh, no, go on. A question. Go.
So, which of the examples from the HSN portfolio have you found falling into those three categories?
Can I hold that until the end, Tony? Because I'm going to go through those last three slides. We'll describe that.
I think it might be the same answer, actually. But could you track the impact of these interventions in terms of your success of scaling? So since you've used Greenhow and Billions Institute, has it changed significantly in the speed and the adoption of what you've been scaling?
I would say more with the Billions work, actually. That we're using the Greenhall academic theory to help plan better, if that makes sense. So try and get our planning process tighter, a bit more well-defined, a bit more thought out, avoiding, you know, when something new lands with us, whether it's a product or a service innovation to spread. Our instant reaction 18 months ago used to be, right, let's just email people. Let's just get out there and talk to people about it. We're trying to use the Greenhall thinking to be a bit more measured before we do that. It's almost like another step that we take to try and get that planning bit right so that we're honing in on the right things to do and the right way to engage people. Sarah.
Thank you. So, yeah, we'll come back to some of that actually in a bit, because what I'm going to do is I'll just talk through some of the Billions Institute thinking and then give you a bit of an overview of how we're doing that sort of planning work, because it's been an interesting sort of a bit of a thought experiment, isn't it, really? Mm. Looking at how we can take these things and put them into practice. So just a quick flick through the Billions Institute. So the Billions Institute is, as you said, an organisation in the US. And the two main people, the main person who's behind it is Becky Margiotta, and she works with Joe McCannon. And what they do is they support large-scale social change in various different areas of the US, but they also run an amazing school called the Skid Row School, which they talk about teaching people how to unleash social change. They're talking about how you can take ideas and really sort of set the world alight with them and get things moving in ways that, I mean, they've had such amazing success in what they've done. And I was lucky enough to go to the US earlier this year to go on to the Skid Row School, and we're working closely with them now. We've had our own Spread Academy down in the Southwest, and we're having another one soon, working with Becky and Joe to spread the word of spread, if you see what I mean. So they're really fantastic people to work with. The work that they do and their sort of the theory that they have developed and the things that they teach come from a very practical background. So Becky was involved, well, she did this amazing campaign in the US which put over 100,000 chronically homeless people back into long-term housing. And Joe worked on the 100,000 Lives campaign, so that was all around patient safety. These were very successful, very high-profile campaigns in the US, which they then took... So they started with all the sort of things we need to do. They found a solution to very difficult problems. They designed a solution to that, and then they spread it across the US, which, of course, as you well know, has all the different systems, the different states, the different structures, and found ways of making that work. At the basis of what they do is the move away from what they say, the bad question, how can I get all these people to do what I want them to do, to how can I help all these people to do what they want to do? The idea being that you're shifting away from just taking something and telling people, this is what we think is a great idea, here you go and do it, to really understanding, it goes back to what Greenhouse is saying, really understanding the context, understanding how things work, so that you can work with people and engage with them in a way that interests them, that excites them, and that builds on what they're already doing, rather than starting from the premise of you're doing this wrong. You're helping build on what they're already doing and engaging with them, and that is the key to help move things along. The set of key principles, again, this links us back to the Greenhouse stuff again, really understanding your innovation and the context and the people you're working with. And I cannot underestimate how important that is. And from our experience with delivering our spread programs, it is so important to spend a lot of time really getting to asking those right questions, to really understand who it is you're working with, what it is that interests them, how you can help them rather than just imposing something on them. They do a lot of work around the importance of having a numeric apportioned clear aim, and the aim being something that people are excited by. So when you are working in a setting, in a trust or whatever, and you are trying to deliver a spread program, you are working with them to help understand how this can work for them. And as a result, what is their aim? What would they be interested in trying to achieve? And by doing that, you're much more likely to get people to keep moving forward and wanting to achieve that aim. They talk a lot about stories and data and using stories to engage people. They are extremely successful at using video, using audio, using stories, using pictures, all these different ways of really getting people to sit up and listen and to really feel what it is that you're trying to talk to them about. And then the issue about data, using data to measure the change, to be able to show people that things are happening, but making that data visible to people, making it useful to the people who are on the front line. Not just having us collecting data behind the scene and collecting the figures on how we're achieving stuff so that we know what's going on, but making sure that you use data, you design data collection systems that are useful and are highly visible to people so they really do make a difference. Oh, and using it to celebrate. So they talk a lot about celebrating achievements, you know, keeping people aware of what's going on and keeping them engaged and celebrating when things are moving on. And in the same spirit of that, they talk about the importance of joining people together. So they do a lot of work with collaboratives. They really see the value in, if you've got a program and you're trying to spread it in lots of different areas, get people together, get all the different the stakeholders involved from different trusts or from different areas, whoever it is you're working with, get them to share what they're doing so that they can learn and they can adapt as they're going along. So there's all these different elements. The story thing is so important, the data, but really working with people and bringing them together so that they can learn from each other. I really like this a lot. Then they say that the number one mistake of leading change is that we try to spark motivation with information. We're very good at pinging out an email, as Stuart said. We're very good at writing a really lovely looking pamphlet with nice pictures on it. All this kind of thing, that's just what we automatically do. It's what we always have done. And they talk about, if you want to spark change, feeling is the fuel, find the feeling and show visible progress. So for them, it's all about that really high level of engagement with people. By helping them, you're not just telling people what needs to be done, you're engaging with them and you're helping them to feel why the change would make a difference to them. And then you're helping them to see what is happening as a result of what the activities they're undertaking. It's the difference from moving from what we tend to do, which was we analyze a situation, we think about what might happen, as a result we make a change, to what they talk about, seeing something, so really engaging with it. You're seeing it, you're feeling what how it could work, and you're making a change that would really be felt to be make a difference. It's a big old emotional shift, and you gave a great example earlier about how we are more likely to do the second bit in our private lives. We're much more likely to work out why making a change would be better for us in more a slightly more emotional way. It's more about feeling why that would make a difference rather than being very analytical about, like, I've looked at this data and I've seen this person can do this and I'm going to make this change. So it's about a slight shift in how we view a few things, really. They have, to their mind, they work along three different stages of spread. They talk about raising awareness, building will, and then it results in a change behaviour. There are lots of different frameworks for spread with different people have different stages. This is just the one the Billions work with, which is actually more simplified than Greenhouse. She has a lot more in her one. But just in terms of basic building blocks, these are quite helpful because it's about, again, working with people. So you're raising awareness, you're building will, and that those are two separate things, that by raising awareness, by telling someone or talking to someone about something, that you want to change, that does not mean that you've then going to get them to do it. So those are two very separate things. Raising awareness is about making people aware of what the options and the possibilities are, and building will is a whole different set of processes. And they then provide some tools of different elements that they think, different tools that you could use to keep yourself moving along. As you'll see from someone on here, these are not all things you would necessarily want to do. So we've got punishment, humiliation, and crisis down the bottom there. The point there being, though, that those are activities that will build will. You know, these are all things. You don't necessarily want to do them, but the point of this is that these are some of the things you might like to do, and by doing this, you can help yourself move along the different stages. There's actually, on their website, we haven't got the link on there, but on their website, they've got a really quite good tool where you can type in the nature of your project and the stage you're up to, and a few other things, and then it gives you suggestions of different tools you might want to use or different activities. And even if it's also just very useful just to get the descriptions they give of those, because they're fantastic, and it gives you descriptions of each of them, and it also gives you really good links to resources on them. So if you go to the Billions Institute website, you'll find it on there. It's called the Many Ways to Many app. That's what it's called, I've just remembered. It's really useful. So this bit now is about how we decided that, you know, we're given these spread programs, these national programs to spread. So that's very different, as Stuart was saying, from delivering a project. Delivering to spread is different from just delivering a project or a program. So what we needed to think about was, what are the planning tools that we can provide to our team that can help them do that thing of shifting the question from how can I get these people to do what I want them to do to how can I help these people to do what they want to do. So number one, central to that, is ensuring we have a deep understanding of context. And we have to plan activities in our work plan, in our daily lives, we have to plan activities that help us to understand and work with that context. So we defined our different stages of spread. So we've got knowledge, interest, decision-making, implementation, and adoption, which is closer to the Greenhouse one and what the network uses, and started thinking about how the activities differ hugely based on each stage of spread, but realizing that if you don't secure the early stages of awareness raising and will building, then achieving adoption is extremely difficult. So you really have to focus on that beginning bit. So what we then did was we looked at each level, and we identified some key questions. And the answers to those questions help define the actions that you then take. I'll show you what I mean in a minute. Because as Greenhouse says in her work, you know, it is about asking the right questions. And if you ask yourself the questions around an innovation or around your setting, you'll help yourself help define what it is you need to do and who you need to work with. And if you don't know the answer to the question, you need to find it out, so it becomes an activity. So this is what the thing that we use at the moment. So if we have a project that came in, and Stuart will talk through, we can talk through a bit of an example, can't we, Stuart? Mm. So say Stuart was working on, which one are we going to do?
Sim's a good one.
Sim's a good one, okay. So Stuart and I sat down with this table, and basically I started asking Stuart the questions up here. So if we start on this side of the table, because that's where we all are at the beginning, So I was sitting down having this conversation, so asking Stuart what the local context is.
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't aware, Serenity Integrated Mentoring, or SIM, is it's a model developed on the Isle of Wight. It's police officer driven. Police officer on the Isle of Wight called Sergeant Paul Jennings, experienced some mental health issues himself whilst working as a police officer, and through that experience noticed some deficiencies in the way that the mental health teams and police force teams on the Isle of Wight communicated with each other and looked after people. So developed this SIM model, which is training a police officer in mental health such that that police officer can look after a caseload of high-intensity mental health service users. So it's a great piece of work. And for us down in the Southwest, and I think it's probably common to many other parts of the country, it's been a struggle for us to get certainly the police force inside of this equation engaged properly around this. Coming back to this, when Sarah sat me down and asked these questions, when we had to go back to basics with one of our regions who were just like saying a flat no to this piece of work at the moment at police force level, we actually got stuck on the first question, didn't we? Because, and I actually live in this area as well. So Sarah asked me, what is the local context operationally, politically? And I'd kind of forgotten through the delivery of SIM that I lived in the county where I'd been reading in the local paper. There were all sorts of things happening around police force budget cuts, local authority cuts, fusions of local authorities. But I hadn't really factored that in properly. Somewhere there was a gap between what I was reading at home and what I was thinking at work. And just through you asking me some of these questions, I was able to quickly identify, well, yeah, actually, I know that. I know that there's all sorts going on with the police force. We don't see any police officers in my local town anymore. So no wonder they don't think that they've got the resource to do this piece of work at the moment. We need to find another way of trying to engage with them. So a lot of this isn't rocket science, really. It's just trying to bring you back to basics and get more to grips with what's happening contextually around something and why ultimately there might be some barriers to adoption that you might not think about if you don't work through this process. So that's been the biggest lesson that I've learned.
It just gives you that level of detail. As Stuart said, you might feel, I think sometimes people feel that they are doing this work, but the amount of detail that you actually need to go into in the thought process you need to go through is probably most of the time deeper than you think it is. So we've done it so far with going back, as like for example with SIM, with projects we already had up and running, so doing it as using it for troubleshooting. But also as things are starting to come in, new projects and new products, it's been really helpful, actually. We've started with everybody who's got a new product that they're starting to spread. Just going through it and giving allows people to have the first stages of trying to work out where they're up to, starting at the knowledge into interest bit. And from that, then, the next other sort of template we have turns the answers to those questions into activities. So you'll know if you don't know the answer to something, go and find it out, basically. Or, you know, you've identified who three key stakeholders are, but you're aware there's somebody who's missing. And so it's just making it slightly more systematic than it probably previously was, which tended to be a bit of a barrage of emails, as you were saying, to just try and find out who's out there, what can we do, and that sort of thing, which doesn't always get you anywhere, and knocking on loads of doors and not really having any response. So that's what we started working on. And we're using now. So you're going to talk about the next bit?
Yes.
Good.
Swap over again. So coming back to your question, Tony, on examples and how we've like taken this thinking, and in some cases we are retrofitting certainly the greenhouse side of things onto our, you know, how we would have planned for these pieces of work. But then drawing on the Billions Institute, you know, the how we go off and do these pieces of work, we are actually doing what we think the Billions Institute would do if they were doing them in some cases. So using Tricia Greenall's structured implementation quality improvement type approach, there's a couple of examples from the seven national programs that HSNs are working on that we think fit into this category. First one is Precept, which is the administering of magnesium sulfate injections to preterm mothers to reduce the risk of cerebral palsy significantly in babies, which I think across all of the programs that the HSNs are working on, it's fabulous, it's a no-brainer. The West of England HSN that leads on this has done a fabulous job at packaging it up in such a way from a quality improvement perspective. It's very clear what we all need to go off and do with our trusts. We all buy some midwifery time across our trusts, and we use those midwives. We train them in some quality improvement, and we get them to embed this change in their system, get them to measure along the way. We get them to celebrate what they're doing. It's a fabulous piece of work, so it draws on all of our learning. The extension agent idea, you might have seen that as one of the bullet points from the Billions Institute. What's an extension agent? That's really using a clinical lead, essentially, to go out and spread a message. So for Precept, we have one of our local neonatologists who, again, we pay some backfill time to go out and support us to deliver this piece of work as well. But all of our seven trusts have all set good aims, are using sort of PDSA, QI approaches to embed this in practice. And I think that's worked, from what I can gather from our project lead. We've done a pretty good job in the Southwest, but we've used what the tools that West of England gave us. And then the second one that we think follows this approach is the emergency laparotomy collaborative. So emergency laparotomy procedures, really high-risk procedure. I'm not clinical, by the way. So don't confuse me with an expert by any stretch of the imagination. But again, Kent, Surrey, Sussex, where this piece of work originates, uses the Breakthrough Series collaborative model that some of you might be familiar with. For those of you that aren't, that's a series of workshops, essentially, where you bring people together around a particular clinical area, teach them some quality improvement and change tools, perhaps in the morning, and then get them working on their change ideas and project in the afternoon. And that's the methodology that all of the AHSNs have used to embed six different improvement initiatives to make ultimately emergency laparotomy procedures safer for our patients in our different regions. So again, there can be few arguments from what I understand about the six. And certainly in the Southwest, we've had a pretty good response to that. We bring the teams together that are involved, teach them some quality improvement, and then get them, you know, working on their emergency laparotomy procedural improvements back at their trusts in the afternoon. So that's worked quite well. Conversely, on the complexity side of things, I've got a couple of examples here, one being Pincer, which some of you might be familiar with. This is it's part software, it's pharmacist-led, but the meat and drink of Pincer isn't really the software at all. It's the method, it's the way that you use the data around prescribing errors, teach pharmacists some quality improvement and root cause analysis skills, and then get those pharmacists to work within their general practice setting to try and not only make sure that patients aren't being caused harm by poor prescribing, but that the system itself is learning why the poor prescribing happened in the first place and that you're making a change. Really complex for lots of reasons, especially for us in the Southwest. We've got competing software systems down with us. So that's one thing that we have to navigate. We have a system that doesn't have any pharmacists. And at the moment, with the formation of primary care networks, we've got all parts of our system competing with itself to hire and move pharmacists from one setting to another. So really tricky. And we've had to try and, I think with Pincer, it's fair to say, we didn't follow enough of these Greenhow or Billions lessons at the start. We didn't get the planning right. We just started to try and engage people. If we'd have taken a breath and been thinking like Tricia Greenhow would have done from the start, I think we would have taken more of these contextual factors in and spent a bit more time trying to warm people up and understand why this, it feels a bit like Marmite with many of the people that we go out and speak to when it comes to Pincer. But I think another thing that we haven't really touched upon, certainly for the programmes that I'm involved in at the Southwest AHSN, you have to immerse yourself in them and you have to become really passionate about them to really want to then drive the spread. And certainly I'm quite heavily involved in Pincer, SIM, some of our more complex ones. They're all fabulous pieces of work that the system should be doing, like there can be no question. And I think that's important when you're thinking about who's going to do something and where their passions and interests lie when it comes to spread. So then finally, on the complexity side, we've already touched upon SIM, really, so I won't go into too much detail on that. Training police officers in mental health to look after high-intensity users as a service users as a full-time role. I think the biggest barrier for us with this piece of work that, again, had we been thinking like Tricia Greenhalgh at the time, we would have factored in earlier, is understanding of the police force and that part of the public sector that we didn't know much about, but that we didn't take too much time to really understand either. We just went off and tried to identify. Well, I remember at one point being in a meeting and just we were just asking around between ourselves who knew someone that worked in the police. So actually that proved to be quite a good way in some respects, so it's a good conversation to have. But we didn't understand the hierarchy. Having gone out and met with police forces, the way that they manage meetings and talk to each other is very different to the way that the NHS engages with itself. In my opinion, for our two forces in the southwest, there's more of a hierarchy. Senior officers will happily let people discuss something. Then when they come in and make a decision, nobody questions it. The conversation moves on. Based on my experience of the two forces with us, very interesting dynamics. And that's something that we've had to learn about when it comes to SIM. And it's something that we would have factored in earlier, I think, had we been thinking like Tricia Greenhalgh. And then final two examples of sort of more social science-based, as Greenhalgh would call them, innovations that we're spreading at the moment, where, coming back to this social element and how it differs from complexity, for me, this is the hearts and minds side. So for Escape Pain, which is 12 sessions of exercise-based therapy for people who've got osteoarthritis in their knees and hips and above 45, again, fabulous program, fabulous innovator, Mike Hurley from South London, and the Health Innovation Network from South London have done, a brilliant job packaging this up for us all to spread. We had some competing systems down with us, so we had physiotherapists who had their own hip and knee classes locally, but were doing 6 sessions as opposed to 12. The evidence here is very clear. You have to do at least 10 and preferably 12 sessions to instill a behavioural change in the patient such that all of the cost and patient benefits for Escape Pain are felt. That's a very difficult conversation when you've got a group of innovative physios locally who have already been doing something similar. And there we've had to really think through carefully how we bring them on side. And for some, that was by circumventing them and trying to get their managers to come down on them a little bit and show them the evidence, which isn't the ideal way of doing it, but that was where the conversation got to. For others, it was a bit more about warming them up and trying to make them see the benefits, because we felt that the conversations we were having with them would enable us to get to that point. And then the last thing that I'll flag here is some work that we're doing through the Innovation and Technology Payment on high-sensitivity troponin. So the use of high-sensitivity troponin in hospital settings for the early rule-out of heart attacks in patients. So patients present with chest pain, and you can take a blood test for high-sensitivity troponin, and then rule out whether they're having a heart attack or not quite quickly. Very long-established technology, but quite a complex pathway from the ED through to the laboratory in a hospital. And to really feel the cost and patient benefit of this, trusts need to be getting blood samples taken really quickly on triage, getting them off to their laboratory quite rapidly, and then getting those blood results back within a 3-hour period to be able to feel the benefit and, you know, for the patient, reassure them and send them home. And certainly from my experience in the Southwest, though, you know, the ED department, the laboratory and the cardiology teams who generally own the pathway don't always see eye to eye. They don't always understand exactly what their local pathways look like. So there's plenty of opportunity in there. But again, lots of playing on hearts and minds, lots of risk aversion, lots of question marks. The evidence around this is quite complicated. There's lots of evidence showing it's a good thing to do. There's some conflicting evidence to show that you might still miss patients. So really complicated. And again, ultimately, you have to get out there and engage with people and understand where they're coming from. And then try and put something in place to try and change behaviour where you can, normally using case studies or videos or examples from elsewhere. Any questions on any of that? Good, right, final, go on, sorry.
On the Billings Institute concept of needing to create a community with an ambition or something around it, does it have a sense of what size that community needs to be? Because obviously, the bigger you get, the more some people will feel left out from that ambition or won't agree with it, or even within one hospital where one community will have a different ambition from another unit. Do they talk about what size you set that at or how you define that level?
No, not really. They're very practical in terms of a lot. The approaches are very much about seeing what works with the different setting you're in. So it's about having that understanding of, you know, if you have an aim that you're seeing how many people engage in that aim, as long as it's relevant to them, the aim needs to be relevant to that group of people. So it would depend on the setting, really.
Okay, so look, just to finish, the one final thing that we'd like to talk about briefly is what we're calling Spread Academy. So this is where we're trying to not only build our own capability as an AHSN in terms of spread effectiveness, but also our regions, so our local clinicians, commissioners, all other stakeholders who want to be part of this, who want to get better at large-scale change and ultimately think more about not just their own projects and how they make them more spreadable, but also how they build a system that's more receptive to new things coming in. We're working with the Billions Institute to deliver over 3 days in the Southwest what we're calling our Spread Academy. So quick plug for it. If you want further details, please come and talk to Sarah and I after this, or email our colleague Samantha who fields queries about it. I'm going to show you a quick video that hopefully will work, which summarises our first running in the Southwest, which was in March this year in Exeter.
The Spread Academy is a 4-day training for people who want to learn how to design and lead large-scale change. What we do is we create a transformational learning experience for change leaders, and it's this really unique combination of both the personal wherewithal and what's going on with you on the inside so that you're able to fully commit and show up and lead really big transformation in the world. And I think what makes it unique is that me and Joe are practitioners. We've done it ourselves. It's not academic or in theory. It's really the nitty-gritty. What do you need to be able to lead large-scale change in any sector?
The Spread Academy really for us is about three things. It's helping the attendees to get ready to spread something, to think about what it's actually going to require of them to reach new audiences and build new networks, to help them refine their objectives, to say exactly what they hope to accomplish by a date certain, and then to help them build a day-to-day operation that's actually capable of operating across a large distributed network.
We're thrilled to be working with the AHSN. I met Jonathan Gray a few years ago when he came through the US version of the Skid Row School back when he was working in New Zealand, and we've stayed in touch ever since, and it's just a real delight to be able to be here and support him and his change leaders.
So I've been struck by how clear the attendees at the meeting from the NHS and social care have been about declaring what they want to accomplish, about stating clear aims and clear objectives. And equally, I think there's been a lot of energy around identifying new tactics for building will and raising awareness and supporting adult behavior change. There's been a lot of energy and a lot of creativity there in the room, and I think a lot of candor too about what it's going to take to make change happen.
Just being able to see everyone's experience in this Spread Academy is going to be unique and different. My hope is everyone gets what they need.
They're clearly very deeply committed to the people of the Southwest that they're serving. I think they have a real passion to be a leader in the country in terms of the outcomes that are happening for patients and families. And I think there's an energy and an optimism about what's possible. And certainly for us, that's a source of energy as well.
There's something here for everyone. And what I know from what I've heard from many, many other Spread Academies is that this is a life-changing trajectory for people, that there's like before the Spread Academy and after the Spread Academy. And may this be something that supports people in being of greater service in the world, that has the most good for everybody.
The Southwest Academic Health Science Network is on a mission to gain 10 million more healthy and happy years of life for people across the region by equipping leaders in health and care with the skills they need to make change. Join us and be part of something amazing.
Good. Hope that's given you all a flavour. Not much more to say from our side, Sarah, is there? I think we're done. Thank you all very much for coming along and for listening to us. And have we got time to take any more questions, if anyone's got any?